Hello everyone, and welcome to episode 5 of the Jewish Journeys podcast, bringing you inspirational Jewish journeys every single week. With us, we have someone very, very special. We have Oliver. Oliver's from London, and I'm not going to give anything more away. I don't want to give away his story.
I'm not numbered here.
Frankie's here. He's American, but I don't want to give away this guy's story, Oliver, man. He's going to talk to us about his Jewish journey, and we're so honored to have him as our fourth guest on the show. So, Oliver, welcome.
Thank you.
How are you?
I'm great. Pleasure to be here as well, and it's really awesome what you're doing, so it's just fantastic to be a part of it.
Our first question is, just tell us a bit about you. Give us a little bio, you know, like where you're from, where you grew up, just kind of like a bit of a background, where you went to university, just like the basics, you know, what you put in your CV and your personal profile.
My dad's your CV. So, yeah, so I grew up northwest London, not too uncommon for a Jewish guy. And yeah, I went to a non-Jewish school growing up. I was part of, you know, the Reform synagogue.
Okay.
And yeah, I was, you know, pretty comfortable. The first sort of thing happened in my life was when I was 15. My parents split up, and you know, that sort of, I guess, helped me get thinking and speaking to a lot of people.
So before that, just to get things in context, before 15, before you split up, so your background in Jewish identity, so your Jewish identity was made, for the Jewish holidays, did you go to synagogue?
Sure.
Did you go for Shabbat, like, or did you just have no background?
Right. Yeah. So I told you, so Reform synagogue. We had like pretty firm but few Jewish ideas in our life. So we would do a Friday night.
Yeah.
With Kiddush, but we wouldn't do anything on Saturday, and I didn't know anything about Saturday. Mm. Yom Kippur, we'd go to the shul service, but I wouldn't really be in the shul, just be hanging around with the other guys. I never ate pork, never ate shellfish.
Yeah.
And it's quite typical of a lot of people who I was sort of,
I can tell you didn't eat shellfish because you're a very selfless guy.
He's used that one before.
Definitely, it's actually a new one.
Yeah,
I mean, awesome. Building up comedy status. I'm getting
it. I'm gonna use it. But yeah, I think it was quite a typical situation I was in. I think a lot of people, as I said, northwest London. Though I mixed with some people, you know, kosher in the house, kosher not at the house. But
yeah, Jewish friends.
Yeah, still they were and still are. Vast majority of my friends are Jewish because of the social circles I was in.
Wait, so if you went to non-Jewish school, how did you have Jewish circles?
So it was like a very like high enough proportion of the school was Jewish.
Fine.
And
what school was this?
It's called Highgate.
Oh yeah.
And it was like, it's like a lot of schools in northwest London. There are other schools, you know, haberdashers, you say.
Yeah,
so a lot
of
them have big Jewish
populations.
Yeah, I was going to say chevras.
Sorry.
But you're right, you're taking me
forget
back.
The non-Jewish words. I'm the host, this is terrible of me. Sorry for the non-Jewish word. Please feel free to use as many Jewish words as you want.
Right.
We don't hold back, it's free speech.
Exactly. But yeah, I don't even know if it was conscious. I think it's just it just happened that way, that a lot of the Jews mix with each other, and you know, obviously plenty of non-Jewish friends as well, and I wasn't, you know, consciously thinking about stuff like that. But
so your identity was pretty much made up of like a social identity. Your Jewish identity,
yeah. Yeah, it was a social identity. And yeah, I guess that sort of gradually changed quite drastically.
So let's, you know, it is a Jewish journey. So Jewish doesn't always mean religious.
Right.
But you just happen to be someone who went from, I'm guessing, a social Jewish identity, and things, questions, philosophical questions, thought-provoking things started to come up. I think you said you mentioned some sort of split. How did you go from just Judaism being like, you know, no pork and, you know, like a social thing, like Jewish friends, and like just, me and Frank, you know what that Judaism's like. You
right.
know? You know, just like, it's a purely, when I thought of my Judaism before I started becoming religious, it was literally, I have Jewish friends.
Mm-hmm.
And like, we're cliquey, you know, like we're Jews, we hang out, like we have our circle, and like people can't come in, like it's hard for non-Jewish people to get into these Jewish circles. It was more like a social group.
I can understand.
Like, you know, these American schools, you have like the jocks and you have the different thing. I kind of felt as Jewish, it was just literally like a club, just full of people who have the same, I wouldn't even call it a religion, just this thing called Judaism. Like,
right.
I didn't see it as a religion. Like, there was nothing religious about it for me. It was literally just a group of people who just had like a cultural similarity.
Exactly. Exactly.
So and then how did it become more than, like, how did it change?
That transition. I think it's hard to say. It's hard for me to remember because it was quite a while ago when I first started making those changes, but it always did feel maybe an underlying level of appreciation or connection to it than, you know, some people who were in my social circles as well. And that I got to a point where, you know, I had friends who weren't going to reform shuls, and they, you know, might do a little bit more kosher than me, do a little more Shabbos than me, and I was aware of these things. And so it wasn't like I was ignorant, but there was a sort of higher level. These people are connecting their Judaism into a different way, and I think that awareness was something that I eventually integrated into myself in the way I was asking questions. And you mentioned, you know, the split of my parents, and I find it hard to sort of get a direct... Yeah, it's hard to talk about.
Yeah,
but
no worries.
The timeline's also like fuzzy.
Yeah.
So
I understand.
I don't know exactly when, but I remember, you know, for my nice reform bar mitzvah,
yeah,
you know, they were like, Do you wanna sing the parsha or not sing the parsha? You know, I was like, definitely I wanna sing it. Definitely wanna do all these things that I wanna do.
You naturally had like an affinity.
I wanted to do stuff properly. I mean, that is just like in all areas of my life, like I wanna do something properly, whether it's like academically or not. You know, and
that's your character.
I think so. And I think,
like, if you want to see truth, if you want to go down the philosophical route, like, I'm going to do it properly.
Exactly. So I guess I started to apply that to the Jewish side of my life. And I'd done the Shema at my bar mitzvah. I'd said it once. And it was maybe a year or two later that I looked on BBC Bite Size, which you'll know for our American audience, it's the British Broadcasting Corporation, and they have an educational website for kids which give you sort of fun, brief facts about every topic. And so I clicked on the Judaism tab, and I guess I was 14 or 15.
Wow.
And comes up, you know, the first thing it says is the most important prayer in Judaism is the Shema. And I went, hold on. Like,
you're 14.
Yeah. I'm like, hold on. This Judaism tab is supposed to be me, and I've got the BBC telling me what the most important prayer of Judaism is.
BBC Bite Size as well.
And I'm not saying it. And
it knows more than me. It's...
Exactly. And I guess I was uncomfortable. I mean, Baal Shuva's move forward because they're uncomfortable with where they're holding.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
So that made me feel...
It's a proper man. It's made... proper.
Made me feel uncomfortable, and so I changed that. So the first thing I did, which was different to what I'd always been doing, was saying Shema.
At 14,
maybe 15, twice a day.
Morning. So holding a Shema, this guy.
Morning. It's a Kohen. You just found it's a Kohen this year. Not Kohen.
We're gonna get there. We're there.
I'm so excited.
Yo.
So excited.
Sorry, audience. We've got spoilers alert of the name of Frankie spoiling the podcast. All right, give us a chance. Let's get to that point. Yeah,
we're building
up the audience, the climax. Everyone's getting there. All right.
Calm down.
So yeah. Anyway, back to mediocrity.
Yes.
Oh, where are you? Sorry.
Right. I mean, that was the first thing I did, and I think hearing other people around, they'll be like, you know, I started saying the Shema, then next week I was keeping kosher, and the week after that I have to say, like, that saying the Shema twice a day must have been 4 or 5 years of all I was doing.
Wow. Talking about slow growth.
Talking about concentration in Shema too. It's about 4 years. Yeah. You must have been
in that Shema, bro.
I knew it pretty well.
You knew it pretty well. You knew about that.
It's in the work.
Definitely knew about that.
Somebody
was
a king. Right.
Like, he was walking around, a walking Shema.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as As you were saying, we were talking earlier, so I finished school. You know, I exceeded academically, like I enjoyed that sort of stuff, and it was like really important part of my life was succeeding academically and,
yeah.
and having that on my mind. And I managed to get to the university I wanted. I went to Cambridge.
Oh wow! That's a Jewish. What did you study at Cambridge?
So I studied economics.
Oh, economics, great. So by this point, you're only still doing the Shema?
Still doing the Shema, coming into university.
How old are you now? Sorry, I don't think we said.
I'm 18.
So 18.
Didn't take a gap year. Coming to university, I'm still saying the Shema twice a day. And I should also add, this whole time, like a lot of Jews, really strong Zionist, feel connection towards Zionism, towards, you know, the Jewish community, and I've been on reform trips, and Zionism was the sort of centrality yeah. of that experience. And so I had some sort of channel through to which to develop my connection, but mm-hmm. not really religiously. I came to university and, you know, had a really good first year. But I didn't go to the Jewish society.
Really? How come?
I think it was when I was saying the Shema twice a day, like, it was the most personal thing. Like, people yeah. always talk about, oh, what connects you to Judaism? Like, the community, like, the meals.
This is between you and God. This is between you and God, directly.
Right, exactly. And to the point where I lacked any sort of communal awareness or sensitivity. Like, it was so personal that, like, it stunted my growth because I didn't know how to sort of externalise that wow. and have external forces pushing me. And then, my twin brother, his name's Joel. He went on. He was probably among the least religious in my immediate family, and he wouldn't fast on Yom Kippur. He'd be cool with me saying that with his own story. And the rest of our family would, and you know, he was, you know, pretty positively, I'd say, atheistic.
Yeah.
Like a lot of guys were.
Yeah, yeah.
And he went on a trip called FJL. It's called Forum for Jewish
yeah,
Leadership.
Yeah.
And he wanted to go to the New York trip to get, you know, a good internship and some learning on the side. And he applies to the New York trip to go and do this Jewish program and internship in New York. And I said, sorry, we're full. But we do have one space on the American trip to Israel. So if you want to take that, then go for it. So he goes, okay, not quite New York in terms of the internship,
not what he wanted.
But I'll head to Tel Aviv and see how it goes for 8 weeks. And, you know, we're close, but actually, I can't remember exactly what I was doing. I was traveling around a lot with friends, and we didn't really touch base too much that summer. I think around a similar time, he'd also gone on a trip to Poland, seen the camps, and these were really profound experiences for him. And I can't speak, you know, for him in details, but he comes back wearing a kippah.
Wow.
And that was
a big jump for you. Like,
right, I'm like, hold on. Suddenly, the thing that I'm doing in my room by myself every night is standing in front of me on top of my brother. Mm-hmm. I'm like, it was really strange. It's really strange. And when he went on this trip he actually finally went off, one of the second year guys here was on the trip with him.
Oh, wow.
And they became very close as well. And he comes back, and one of the houses he was staying at for Shabbos, he'd had a conversation with one of the hosts, and they'd given him a pair of tefillin. And I didn't know what tefillin was.
Wow. How many years ago was this now?
This is at the end of my first year of university, so this is now 2019, early 2019, late 2018. Oh no, maybe.
So you just finished university, you just finished?
So we just finished the first year of university.
Now, I'm saying now.
So now I've just finished university.
Yeah, yeah.
Right,
so
exactly,
I'm trying to put it into context. Yeah,
yeah. So 2019-ish. And so he then has these to fill in. I don't know what to fill in are. And he's stayed in contact with one of the rabbis there and a couple of the other guys on the trip. And he's, I don't know how immediate it was, because he, you know, increased his pace soon afterwards. But eventually he was learning with these guys.
Wow.
Three guys each, every week. And he was telling me all this stuff. And all this stuff that was deeply personal and enclosed for me. And it's quite weird. I don't want to interject the story, but I'm not an introvert at all. I'm just very outgoing, quite loud sometimes. And so this was the personal thing that I sort of had. And suddenly, like, my brother's telling me all this about that tefillin. He's telling me all this stuff. And I'm like, it's like a complete shock for me. It's complete shock. That was the...
Like a shock in like a positive way?
Yeah. To be honest, yeah. I don't know. I can't exactly remember, because it... obviously a positive shock, but also...
And it really, something in you switch.
Yeah, like also moment. In a sense like a bit of confusion, a bit of uneasiness about the whole thing. Because I'd be telling myself in my head, why aren't you doing this? And that's one thing. And we know, you know, we're very easy at quieting that voice down. When you hear it from your brother, it's a lot easier.
The brother who was a few weeks earlier a full-on atheist who, like, hated everything.
Right.
That's crazy.
Exactly, yeah.
Hashem sending his signs.
That's exactly what it felt like. That's exactly what it felt like.
It felt like a message, like a personal message from Hashem.
Yeah, it was amazing. And he...
That was your moment.
It was a big moment. And he just, over the next 2 years...
Great.
In a way that a Kirov rabbi would have probably been too scared to do, just pushed me... And pushed me, and he was always one step ahead.
Always telling you, like,
you should do this. Look, we should do this. We're supposed to be doing this.
Brothers can do that.
Exactly.
Now you're the one in yeshiva.
Sorry?
Now you're the one in yeshiva.
Right, exactly. So we're in a...
The coach pushed you.
I've just got goosebumps. I'm like, I'm so much shocked right now. My whole body is like...
Oh my gosh.
I can't believe I'm hearing. I'm okay. I'll be okay.
Let me get some water.
Unbelievable.
I'll try not to be too verbose, because we're it was funny. He found some things easier than me. He's a big gym guy, you know, clearly like yourself and Frank, and he found it hard to give up, you know, the chicken, you know, it's harder to get kosher chicken and stuff, going kosher. He was like, That was a big thing for him. For me, I noticed that, like, I had this on my mind, like, when I started davening Shmona Esrei, around the same time my brother came back, or maybe just before, and I was thinking, am I really saying all these things? And then going and eating non-kosher chicken, like, I've got friends who eat kosher, like, I know what it is.
Yeah, it felt contradictory.
Yeah,
maybe.
The Nando's was too cheeky.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We love the chicken. But it felt contradictory, like,
exactly.
One aspect of my life is dedicated to, like, religion, and then I feel like when something's truthful, it's like, that's what I was like as well, but, like, when I saw truth, it's like, it's hard to do anything that doesn't, it's not in line with that truth,
right.
Because it's like, it feels completely wrong.
Exactly, and the only thing that is keeping you down is your immediate physical needs.
Yes.
And exactly. Suddenly we're having, at yeshiva, we're having all these battles.
Yeah.
You know, set out to us by Rav Dessler and all these all these Jewish terms. It's amazing.
And so you get more and more inspired. You
right.
Try more and more things.
Exactly. And so, in fact, there were times where I must admit, like, I was at each level initially, I was so resistant to the next step. I was like,
yeah.
Keeping, like, when I, you know, first started davening a bit more, I'm like, kosher, like, give me a break, come on. I'm not crazy. And I eventually went kosher in my second term of my last year, and I was like, Shabbos, like, yeah, good one. not here to ruin my career. I eventually had a first conversation with someone who wasn't my brother, about a religious guy, and it was... one of his madrists from the trip, who actually went here a few years ago, Amachon Yaakov, and I was just giving him all these questions, and he was just shooting down my misconceptions one by one. I went, I can't say Birka Hamazon after every time I eat. He says, it's only after bread. I'm like, okay. But how am I going to wear my sit-sit out everywhere? Like, I can't be doing that. He's like, you can tuck them in.
Yeah.
And then I go, okay, right. Am I going to keep Shabbos and ruin my career? He's like, I know plenty of guys who keep Shabbos who they're doing just fine. don't you worry.
Blowing them down.
And that was a moment. I was also listening to a lot. He told me to listen to a few podcasts. And there came a point where I was like, okay.
I needed a bit of
humility and be like, even though I'm not there yet, doesn't mean I have to justify everywhere I am. You know, I would be so creative looking for like rogue rabbinic opinions saying that I didn't have to do X, Y, and Z, I wasn't doing the moment. Which was, it was probably the first Torah I learned was,
it was good that you,
these rogue Gemara.
So Jewish. He has such a Jewish mind. The first Jewish learning he does, he tries to find the way out of halakha. Before he even religious.
He's a Cohen.
He's a true Cohen.
Exactly.
That's a good Jewish mind.
Right, exactly. Spot on. And then, I got to the point where I was like, right, I'm not doing everything I want to do right now. But here you go. There's where I want to be. I'm going to just accept it and accept that I'm in flux. I'm not where I want to be right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to justify it. I just need to get there slowly, slowly. And then I got a job. I got a place for a job to work in London. And I was like, okay, it's all right. I fancied in my last summer after graduating from university, getting the grade I wanted. And last summer, I'll go on this trip, FGL, that my brother went on. And over the period of exams, I would do stuff before I actually started keeping certain halakha. So if I'd start like eating a lot of fish rather than chicken, because I knew the fish was more kosher than the chicken, and I was like, right, I'm not eating any chicken anymore. I'm just gonna go full fish. And then I started wearing a cap.
Took on slowly,
beautiful. I started wearing a cap before I started wearing a kit. They're like, Ollie, why are you wearing that Nike hat everywhere?
Just start.
Exactly. Yeah. So stealth.
How can you tell if someone's Jewish? If they're full on suit on the train, like a Nike Yankee Yankee cap on.
Yeah.
Going to Wolf. Going to Wolf Street or whatever.
Exactly.
They're wearing a hat.
So I eventually, by the time I graduated, I was wearing a kippah, I was kosher, I was Shomer Shabbat. Shomer Shabbat during my finals at Cambridge was quite an experience. But yeah, I mean,
you did it.
Yeah.
You sacrificed.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then how did you get here where you are in Yeshiva? Like how are you?
Right, so yeah. I then went on this, I had my job starting this September. As you can see, I'm right here.
Yeah, good job, man. Is it how hard you are?
Right.
Yeah, good salary. Hashem's giving you a great salary, don't worry.
Love Hashem. And so I decided I'd go on this FJL trip that my brother went on. You know, I was already from, but you know, I had two close friends who were going on the trip as well. You couldn't get into Israel at the time in England by yourself. And so I thought, you know, have a nice holiday, get an internship even though I don't really need it, and enjoy the time with my friends and some Jewish learning as well. Like,
why not? It'll be nice. Great package.
It'll be nice. And while I was there, you know, immediately the people, the organisers who are religious Jews and a couple of rabbis as well, they understand where I'm holding, and the question starts to arise. You know, what do you think about going to yeshiva? I was like, yeah, that's cute.
good one.
This is like maybe a few months ago.
Rabbis are the best comedians, trust me.
This is June, July. And I'm like, yeah, I've got a job to do, so, you know, it's a nice idea, but, you know, I'll see you for dinner. And then, basically,
They got you.
Yeah,
there
was
exactly. You're done, mate.
You knew it. It was one specific moment, and it's
the best salesman, mate. You're the best salesman around, mate.
They're good. Yeah, so finally, I made my way to the Kirov system after a long time.
You got aged.
No, it's like, yeah, I did. That is getting aged is the verb that my friends use. Yeah. So
FJL is better. I got JLE'd.
Oh, very nice.
We all do it. It's great. I'm proud. I'm not a victim mentality.
You've got to own your back.
It's great.
Exactly.
So go on. So like. So they persuaded you.
Right. It was one specific conversation. It sounds a little more romantic than it actually was. It was very clear-headed, intellectual, practical conversation, and it was in the Judean hills of Tekoa, seeing the sunset of Jerusalem. But that's not what I was looking at. I was looking at the ground and thinking very hard.
I don't know why I didn't get on one knee.
Not quite. The organizer of the trip, I'll mention his name is Ben Thwaites. And I should say all of the organizers of that trip had a really profound effect to get me where I was. This conversation in particular started with me. He basically said, "Look, Ollie, look, I'm not telling you to go to yeshiva, right? You know, it's a nice idea. You know, in an ideal world, you'd go. But here's what I'm asking: Do you think you'd regret it if you didn't go?" And I'd be like, "You know, again, it's a good point. Maybe not. But I've got this job." And he's like, "Okay, if you start your career a year later, if you defer your job a year." You start your career a year later. Are you really going to be in that different place in 20 years' time because you started your career a year later? Versus the year you spend at yeshiva and how it transforms all that free time that you can grab and steal away to learn Torah is going to be a completely different experience to how it would be if you hadn't spent that year at yeshiva.
Wow.
And just putting that in, as I said,
very clear, logical.
Very clear, logical. It's how I like to think. And hearing it like that, I had no answer for him. And I'm very without words to say. But I didn't have an answer for him. And I said, okay, but you know, it's a very nice idea, but what about deferring the job? He said, I can help you with that. And within the next week, he helped me, you know, get in contact with the right people and to talk about the situation and, you know, check over my letter that I was going to send. And within, I said that at that moment on that conversation, I'm going to at least try to defer. He said, why are you not at least try to defer? What's the worst that can happen? I said, I've got no excuse for that. So I tried to defer. And the company let me.
Wow.
Which was great.
Big brother.
And then some difficulties arised with, my mum's, you know, single mother, most amazing person in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can understand it was hard for her. And so there were some difficulties in terms of clarifying that situation. But we eventually worked through it. In different ways. My brother wanted to go as well, but between the three of us, my mum and my brother, we worked out it's best if my brother, you know, stays in London for now, with a view maybe to go to yeshiva later, later in his life or whenever. So he's moved to Golders Green to, you know, integrate himself into the community back in London. And I'm here, and
whenever
we call each other, he always makes sure that we exchange
words of Torah.
You know, he's read Pirkei Avot, doesn't want to meet him with scorners.
Yeah.
I have to say, I mean, from what you can hear, like, my brother played such a big role. I've got an old sister as well who's she's not so religious, but she made Aliyah to Tel Aviv.
She's in Israel.
That's a good start. And I mentioned that to someone, they said, you know, you don't make me realise it, but your parents probably instilled, you know, a really, really strong Jewish identity there.
100%.
And I think that must have been
you know, the driving force. All those times I said, I can't explain this, but I did that, you know. I think I've got a lot of them to thank, and ultimately, of course, I've got a
Wow.
Swafu.
Wow.
And as Frank said, now I'm the only girl in yeshiva, so I had to crash course in discipline.
So that could be your funny bowl to shiva moment. So we're going to ask you about your funny bowl to shiva moment.
Oh my gosh.
Maybe.
Oh my gosh.
Have you got something more?
When you found out he was coming.
Okay, that's
very
funny. I have to say, there's some funny moments there. So I found out I was coming, I was... After going on an Israel tour, which you know everyone in the UK usually does,
F16.
Exactly, I went F7Y as well. So after maybe a year, it was a while afterwards. I go to my dad and like, you know, this trip, a couple of guys, they weren't going into the cemetery. Like, what's that about? He's like, oh yeah, that's us. We're those guys. I'm like, what do you mean? I was chilling in the cemetery. I was having a great time seeing all the graves. He's like, no, we're not supposed to do it because we're Cohens.
Oh my god.
I'm like, okay.
That's so cool.
That meant very little to me until this FGL trip. And then they started realizing on Shabbaton, we'd go and visit family. He's like, oh, you're a Cohen? Oh, you should have shacharit. You need to go up and put a talis over your stuff and start waving around. And so I was like, okay, I didn't know the words, but I was in, you know, doing sort of, you know, song and dance show underneath the seat. And then I had to get the hang of it. So I had this multicoloured reform talis, which was, you know, the size for a 13-year-old, that I went up to this Haredi shul in Hanov. but they didn't say anything. They were so kind. And I was just, yeah, waving about. Slowly caught on to what the other guys were
trying to
doing.
Look, trying to not look as out of it as possible.
There were times where I, you know, walk up halfway through and take my place at the centre and waving about. And then...
that is a funny bass tune.
Rabbi Jacob's here has helped me slowly refine what I'm supposed to be doing.
Please God, you'll be the best Cohen blesser in the country.
I'm
going to be world renowned for your Cohen blessing. Oi, 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 oi,
oi. We're the Berkas coming in together at Dakota.
Yeah?
Yeah, sick. There's 20,000 coming or something, no?
That was quite a moment.
Yeah.
And that was just to finish up from Sukkot the year before. No sukkahs, no sleeping outside, to Berkas Kohanim at the Kotel with my brother Frank the Levy. It was a bit.
I'm the peasant black Israelite.
You're coming next time.
so just to end off, like, I think we're running out of time. Just a quick final remarks from you. Like, what would you say to someone who's either at the beginning of their journey, you know, thinking of becoming more religious or connecting to their Jewish identity? What would be your message to them?
I think for me, it was such a personal experience. And whether you're someone like me who kept it personal for a long time, or whether you're really drawn to the communal aspect, you should take the time to really work it out within yourself. What do you want from this? You know, not to think too far ahead in the future, but think strongly about where you are, where you're holding, and what you're happy with and what you're not happy with, and really work, really take the time to work yourself out in your head. And have a think about stuff and not get too carried away.
Beautiful.
And yeah, I think eventually to have that humility and realize you don't have to necessarily justify where you are. I say, you know, work out where you are, but if it's inconsistent, it's inconsistent. And be ready to admit that. Don't be like me and have to at each stage find more and more rabbinic opinions to justify where you are.
Beautiful.
Have the humility to, you know, realize you're on a journey, and as the name of your podcast says,
Jewish journeys, man. Well, I'm sorry, like, I'm just so taken aback from this interview. Like, you have so many goosebumps, and like so many. Wife always says instead of Hashrak and Protis, she has HP.
HP.
There's a lot of HP moments.
I love that.
Yeah, divine providence for those that don't know what Hashrak and Protis is. But there's a lot of amazing, amazing moments in your life, and. I do believe that everyone's given a story for a reason, and I do genuinely believe that your story is going to help and inspire so many people more than you know, and you're here for a reason, and hopefully you'll take your inspiration and continue to grow and help other people.
So thank you so much.
Thank you.
For coming and sharing your story and being so in depth. And,
thank you.
We look forward to coming back with another episode of Inspirational Jewish Journey on the Jewish Journeys podcast.
Thank you very much. Folks.